and welcome to Beyond the Bio. Stay tuned this week to hear my conversation with Rob Moore. If you haven't heard of Rob, where have you been? He's pretty out there. He's very prolific with his social media content and has done all the things that I encourage often on this show around podcasting, books, speaking, etc., and has done it on a huge scale. Rob went from being 50 grand in consumer debt at the age of 25 to less than 5 years later being a multi-millionaire, firstly through his property portfolio, and then he co-founded the Progressive Group, starting with Progressive Property, and then on to Progressive Success and the Entrepreneurs Business Academy. Having given over 1,000 speeches in the last decade, Rob is a sought-after keynote speaker and ranter, known for his Rob's rants and direct no-filter tactical content. Rob is a mentor to many millionaires, celebrities, and has also helped tens of thousands of startup and scale-up entrepreneurs go from zero air to nearly there to millionaire. This is an interesting conversation. Stick around to learn how Rob has used his personal brand, some of the challenges that he's had along the way, and what he's working on next. This is a great conversation. Let's get stuck in. Rob Moore, great to have you on Beyond the Bio. As someone with a very strong personal brand, I'm really excited to ask you lots of questions all about it.
Hit me up, fire away, let's do this.
So you have built a very strong personal brand alongside all of your businesses. Was that intentional from the start, or has this just evolved naturally?
It wasn't intentional from the start, no. I don't actually really like social media. I'm more private than people think I am, and I think I have, what, nearly 4 million followers now, and I get recognised a lot when I go out, and that's nice, and they're nice, but sometimes it's a bit overwhelming. All I wanted to do when I started business, which was 20 years ago, was one, get out of debt, two, run my own business, three, become a millionaire, four, become like a property, I guess, tycoon, as we call it. And I would have rather just done those in private. But the world's changed. So it evolved naturally. And the reason I started a personal brand was because it's much cheaper than running ads.
Absolutely. And are you still writing all of your own content in terms of social media?
Yes. So I do not like AI-driven content. And I do not like content that's written by someone else and not in the voice of the person I'm following. And we're in this weird world now where we've got loads of AI and everyone wants to outsource everything. And I get that because of time leverage. But at the same time, people want to see more human connection. And no one wants to follow a creator who's not creating their own content. So I probably do spend 2 to 3 hours a day on creating my content, the ideas, the messaging, the tone. And look, I've got, what, 16 social media channels. We've got branded channels as well as my own sort of personal channels. So there's repurposing that goes on, and sometimes something's been edited by an editor. But you, if you're following me, 80% plus of that content is directly from me, and I think that's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you're saying that people are recognizing you when you're out and about, you want them to feel that the person that they see online is the person that they're meeting in real life as well, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And you want them to be nice to you and not be nice to you. I mean, I walked about 150 meters with my friend Nigel Farage, and he got stopped every 10 seconds. And one person wants to shake his hand and hug him. And then the next person wants to, you know, wrestle him to the ground and shoot him. And I don't have that same intense experience in public. But that being said, you can do podcasts if you don't want a public persona. It's a cost of building a personal brand. But yeah, when people come to your events or buy your products or kind of meet you, if they feel like they know you and they know the real authentic you, you've essentially fast-forwarded a lot of either rapport, connection, or just shortened the sales cycle if you want to sell products and services. So that's really good.
Completely agree with all of that. So just before we move on to not be looking at just social media, tell me about some of these encounters that you've had. You've said there that you have some good experiences and some less good experiences. Give me an example of each.
Well, every time I go to London, I went to Bristol recently, or I mean, Peterborough is my hometown, so obviously it's even more. But people will generally stop me and say, hey, you're the guy that interviewed Andrew Tate. Hey, you're the guy that interviewed Chris Eubank. Hey, you're the guy that does the YouTube. Hey, you're the guy that's written the book Money. Hey, you're the property guy. And I haven't yet had an experience where someone's accosted me or got angry with me. So far, it's all been positive.
But you must get a bit of abuse online, because what you do say is, you know, it's not vanilla, is it? It is pretty out there in terms of very clear what you think about certain things, very topical, you know, the stuff that's going on with government at the moment, very strong opinions about that and some strong examples too. How do you deal with any challenges that you get online? Do you just ignore them? What do you do?
Yeah, so I have loads of haters online. I think we have about 200 million views and downloads of my content per month. So even if you only get 1% haters, what is that, 20,000? You do the maths, it's still a lot. And 10 years ago, I didn't like it. And I took it personally. And I either wanted to delete my content, or in moments of bravado, I wanted to go in and prove them wrong and argue with them. And all you do with either of those responses is ruin your weekend when you're supposed to be with your kids or disconnecting. Because a lot of the haters are online late at night, or when they're drunk, you know, or when they're not happy with their own lives. Now I have a much more pragmatic view of haters. Number one is, most people who hate me don't hate me. I just represent something about them that they're not clear about yet. Or I've maybe picked a scab in them. You know, if I'm talking about making money and they're broke, how's that not, they're not going to get triggered by that. So I understand that it's their emotion, not mine. That's number one. Number two is, you know, we're all struggling with things. And so I actually have sympathy, empathy for my haters and critics, because, you know, maybe they're going through some trauma. The UK is kind of in ruin. Business is harder for a lot of people. So I know that maybe they're just going through something. But number three is, they're brilliant for my virality. You know, lots more comments, lots more engagement. The algorithms love it. You know, a lot of your fans, they just hit the like button. But your haters go in and tell you what they don't like. And then there's a sub-thread argument going on. And so I should be, you know, I'm very grateful for all my critics. And I kind of wish I'd got over it a bit earlier. It took me a few years. But look, when you're clear who you are, the opinions of others don't matter.
Mm. And I think that's a really powerful lesson in that completely, and especially around how much that just doesn't happen in real life. Because when I'm talking to people about them becoming more visible, they worry about that and they are, you know, trying to grow their brand. But actually, in your example there with all of those numbers, if you're not getting any grief whatsoever in person and it is just the sort of the online bit, then it's maybe doing some work around mindset, or just getting over it, or looking at the benefits that you're actually getting from the plus side of it, so that you can then just ignore and block out those trolls, I guess.
Well, like anything, judge it when you've got there. You know, a lot of people judge being rich, but they're broke. At least try and be rich. Give it a go. See how it is. And if you really hate it, then just give it all away to me and go back to being broke. So it's the same with having a personal profile, you know, a good personal brand. There's so many upsides. You get invited to speaking gigs and they pay you. You know, people send you loads of free stuff. You get loads of business and clients for free. Otherwise, you'd have to be spending a load of money on ads. Okay, so the odd person doesn't like you. The odd person disagrees with you. That happens anyway. It's just when you've got a personal profile, you hear about it.
Completely. So someone that's written multiple books, hosted various podcasts and creating lots of content, what would you say has been the best method in terms of raising your profile and your brand? And what would you be recommending people get started with if they're just starting out on this journey?
I think the best way to raise your profile quickly is to comment on big events in the news, the media and the world that everyone's commenting on, that's got massive energy already, and then spin your take on it, linking it to your brand. You know, so I might take things that are going on in the economy or with the, you know, Donald Trump, etc., and link it to my brand of money. That's probably the quickest way to build a personal brand and go viral. A lot of people just do that as like a gimmick. They're just basically commenting on everything, but with no real substance. But if you find the link between the mass media, the frenzy, the hype, and link it to your brand, that's a win. That's the first thing. The second thing is be really clear about your message and just bang the drum every day. Now, I'm not the best at that because I like a bit of variety. A lot of entrepreneurs do. So I have my Disruptors brand, my More Money brand, my Money.School brand, my Progressive Property brand. I've written books on business, time management, property investing. And if I were giving feedback to myself, I would probably say, choose a bit more of a narrow niche a bit sooner and do it for a decade or more. And so that's, you know, moving forward into 2030 and 2040, I'm much more focusing on my money brands.
So if someone was just starting out, the advice there from you, having been there and done that, is focus on one thing. And then if they want to, I guess they can go into different directions once they've achieved it in one area.
Yeah, entrepreneurs find it difficult because we get excited about lots of different opportunities. And
don't we just?
You know, I've got two podcasts. I could have started 10. I was just thinking this morning, okay, so I'm 46. Where do I want to be when I'm 50? Where do I want to be when I'm 60? You know, what's my vision? And I know my vision is to help as many people on this planet get better financial knowledge. So I'm very clear that, for example, my More Money YouTube channel will overtake and will be bigger than my Disruptors YouTube channel, even though one has nearly 500,000 followers and one has nearly 3,000 followers because I just launched it. So I'm very clear about the future. And the more clear you are about the future, the more it makes the present easier to do. But just, you know, if you played snakes and ladders and the ladders were short and the snakes were long and you kept going down snakes all the time, it's going to be frustrating. You're on the board playing the game, but you're never moving forwards. So consistency, everyone talks about consistency, but, you know, the art of compounding is essentially exponential growth over time. And the one rule of compounding is don't interrupt it. The one rule of consistency is don't interrupt it. If you smash the gym every day for 3 months and then take 3 months off, you will be back where you started. If you just go to the gym 3 to 4 times a week for 5 years, you will be in great shape. So I think consistency is hard for people. Either they're impatient or they don't have a long enough term view or they get distracted by too many things or they can't control their own emotions of fear of missing out. And I know I've also made those mistakes, if you like. But yeah, at least if you're going to make those mistakes, always make them moving forwards, always make them taking action. It's better to have one too many books or one too many YouTube channels than none at all.
Totally. And I think consistency is massively underrated because people see this whole, you know, get rich quick type thing. And I would imagine that a lot of people that consume your content have got that in mind and that's what they want to do. But actually, the reality is you've got to be consistent and you've got to work hard. I mean, how many hours a week do you still work now as someone that, you know, is financially secure and has got lots of successful businesses?
So I start work anywhere from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. And I work every day, every weekend. In fact, my wife said to me recently, Rob, you've worked every single day since Steve Jobs invented the iPhone. I hate Steve Jobs. So I'm not preaching that, by the way. I don't preach how long anyone should work. It depends what's important to you in your life. I merge and blend in my family, my travel, my life and my work. I don't separate them and that works for me. But if you want to really make money and you really want to make a difference, you have to put in the hours and work hard. But you also have to choose what to work hard on. And not enough people talk about that because, you know, there's plenty of coal miners or nurses or really good, honest people making an honest living and not making much money because they're working hard on something that doesn't pay well. So you got to work hard on the right thing that pays well.
When do you sleep then?
Well, I sleep from about 9:30 p.m. to between 1 and 5 a.m. Just go to bed. I mean, I go to bed before my kids.
I do as well.
Bobby woke me up about 3 times last night and it still wasn't even 10 p.m. So
love it. Early nights are the way forward. I'm telling you, they really are. Thinking about your books then, because you've got quite a few books and books are something that a lot of our podcast listeners are really into. How have they accelerated your brand? Have they helped you to win a new audience? Have they helped you to increase your speaking fees? Tell us about that.
Yeah. So my two probably most popular books are Money and Life Leverage. And I think between them, they're translated in about 16 different languages. And yeah, I've had speaking gigs all over the world, and I'm paid many tens of thousands of pounds for those speaking gigs. And I've opened up markets in places like Korea that I never would have opened up had I not had the book. So yeah, the books have been really good. Having a good publisher really helps with the translation deals and getting you into physical shops and airports, and then adding credibility. But self-publishing is quicker. And for selling on Amazon and selling quicker and making more money, self-publishing, I think, is probably better. Or for new authors who can't get in with a publisher. So I've actually self-published some, and I'm published by Hachette as well. But I'd say translation deals, new markets, shops, airports. I wasn't infiltrating those markets when I was self-publishing.
Interesting. When you are approached for speaking opportunities, what's your criteria for deciding if you want to do it?
Will you pay my fee?
What is your fee? Can you share that? Is it secret?
Well, look at you. So my fee is currently £20,000. Mm-hmm. I have charged more, but yeah, that's what I feel is a fair fee. If it's overseas, it's more. So my criteria is, do I think I can impact the audience? Am I given enough freedom to be able to speak without being controlled, filtered? You know, if a speaking firm comes to me and says, Rob, we'd love to pay double your fee, but you can't talk about this, that, and this, and those things are important to me, I'll just turn it down. Some people want an audience that's already fit for their niche. I don't care about that. I'll talk in any audience as long as I think I can make an impact. So they're probably my criteria.
And do you have like a set kind of talk that you do?
No.
Do you prepare it quite a bit in advance, or are you just rocking up and talking about what you fancy talking about that day?
Yeah. So my friend Gerald Ratner has one talk. He's done the same talk for 25 years, made millions out of it. You know, I know other speakers. It's a great talk. And he's still reading the same 5x7 cards that he wrote on 25 years ago. You can see a sellotape, and they're all dog-eared. And I've got friends who are peers in my industry that get paid similar amounts of money, and they pretty much do the same talk. And I see the upside of that, because you get known for that. But you get a different talk every time with me. I think I've done 1,350, 1,400 talks. I've spoken at some events like 6 years in a row. And every time you get a different talk, you get a raw talk, a natural talk, a ranty talk. We just talk about what themes you want me to hit, and then you just let me go. And, you know, the good thing about that is all my existing followers and fans get something new every time. I suppose it's a bit more confusing for a new person that's watching me. I also bring what's going on in my life into the talk. So if business is absolutely smashing it, I'll bring that in. If life's really hard and I've got loads of shit going on, I'll bring that in, and I'll just bring what is real in the moment, as opposed to a script. I don't do PowerPoint. I don't have visuals. I get off the stage. I get in the audience's face. And obviously because of that, some people don't want me to speak at their events because I'm maybe a little bit too disruptive. But I think you've got to find your own point of difference and, you know, lean into the power of being yourself.
And for a lot of people, public speaking is their ultimate fear, especially when they're just starting out with growing their brand. Did you have any training in the early days, or is this confidence in speaking just come from having done like 1,400 talks? Is that the way to do it? I mean, it'll take a while to get to that point, but, you know, did you have any training?
So I think I may have done 1 to 2 little networking-y talks without any training, and it was a disaster. And then out of nowhere, I got quite a big gig early. I'm talking, 250, 300 people. And because I've done a couple of talks, and you know when people come up to you and go, oh, yeah, that was nice. You know, what they really mean is, that was shit. And so I'm like, I'm clearly shit. And I'm clearly not natural at this. I'm clearly not born with this, even though 1-to-1, I'm perfectly confident speaking, but it's different in front of an audience. So no, I went and got a lot of training. I thought it was really important. I did a Chris Howard public speaking course in Australia. Then I continued to develop my skills. I ended up buying that company. And then we now run that speaker training many years after. But, you know, public speaking, the problem with something going wrong in front of 250 people is it's much worse than it going wrong in front of no one. So actually, you do want to prepare yourself properly for that. And, you know, I've learned a framework and a system, but my style looks very accidental and natural and in the moment. Some people like to be scripted and tight. And, you know, both styles can work.
And you've just got to find that. And I think that there definitely is something in doing more and more and more of them, because having done 1400, you know, having that under your belt, is you learn as you go. And I expect you've probably seen all sorts of different things happen in terms of how the audience react to things as well, and you can develop your confidence with that. So you have been in the business world for a long time, which makes you sound really old, but you're the same age as me, or similar age as me, and I don't feel old. But thinking about what's next for you, and you mentioned there, you know, when you're 50, when you're 60, how do you see personal branding evolving over the next few years in line with that?
So my personal vision is to help as many people on this planet get better financial knowledge. My goal by 2030 is to have 200,000 members of my money.school. And we have a 3-1-line strategy approach to get there. And one of those things includes developing my global personal brand. And it's taken many years to be that tight and clear. We've got it in a 1-page document, which all of our 100 staff have access to. So they know where we're going and they're on the same mission with us. Now, where do I see personal brand going? Well, I only see it growing. You know, people think the internet is old. It's 30 years old. People think social media is old. It's 20 years old. People think AI is old. It's 3 years old. The personal brand, I think Michael Jackson, in my mind, stands out as the first person who really, you know, was the personal brand. And then probably Michael Jordan. And as it's evolved now, any TikToker, YouTuber, Facebooker, Instagrammer can build a personal brand. You know, you've got Britain's Got Talent, which is one of the biggest mainstream shows, and you've got KSI as a judge who used to just sit and watch games and laugh at them online. So it's probably the best way to build a business and create wealth and leverage getting sponsors without needing staff, overhead, loans, premises, stock, and all the other weighty overhead things you needed 25 years ago. I remember my dad owned a pub and I wanted to start another pub, and I had to go and put on a suit and go to our bank manager and ask him for a 100 grand loan, and he turned me down. And there was no other way. And now you just start a TikTok channel, go walk on the street and interview people, and bang, like my friend Simon Squibb, who I've known for years, blown up out of nowhere. Well, he hasn't. He's just got on streets and started talking to people, and he's found his thing. So it's going to evolve, the personal brand, because algorithms are going to change and what people want is going to change. But we have this decentralization of media now, which is brilliant. Media used to be radio, TV, print. Then it was Google and Google ads. And then it was kind of big corporations or movie and music celebrities. Now it's anyone on social media.
Yep. The time is now. Rob, it's been awesome talking to you. I've enjoyed picking your brain around what's working for you and where things are going. If anyone listening happens to not have heard of you, where is the best place for them to find you? Because you have so many channels. Where would you want to direct them to?
I would say money.school. So money.school is my global financial education platform. I'm disrupting the current education system because I believe there's not enough good personal wealth and financial knowledge taught in schools. So money.school is there to replace that. It costs less than one Starbucks coffee a week. You can cancel anytime. There's no ongoing contract. But it's got hundreds of hours of my courses, resources and masterclasses to make, manage and multiply money. We've got new content updated twice a week. We've got Sunday session Zooms every week. We've got masterclasses running weekly. So if anyone wants to start or scale a business, they want to get better financial knowledge, the link is just money.school. You know, from there, you can find my books. Yeah, you can find my books and my social media profiles easily. But money.school is probably the central hub to start. And, you know, I'm on this global mission. And so one of the ways I'm going to give back is anyone who joins money.school, if they've got kids under the age of 18, they can just give them the login and no kid will ever pay for money.school. We've actually got a financial homeschooling series for kids launching in a couple of weeks. We're going to do a 10-week homeschooling series for kids learning about money, the things they didn't learn at school. So it's money.school.
I'll get my daughter onto that. Sounds good.
Well, you have to join first and then give her the login.
I join and then give her the login. She'll love that, though. She's already very keen to learn about money. In fact, it's our Easter holidays this week and she's in our office doing some jobs to earn some money.
If she ever wants some work experience, I always take on young teenagers for work experience. So you can always send her our way if you want.
I will. Pop her on the train down to Peterborough. Awesome. All right. Cheers, Rob. Thank you very much.
Well, it's a pleasure.
Thank you for listening. If you're serious about growing your profile, take our free profile assessment quiz to see where you're at right now and get hints and tips on how to improve your score. You'll find the link to the quiz in the show notes. If you've enjoyed the episode, it would be mint if you'd subscribe, like, and leave a review. See you next Monday.